Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All righty, welcome back. Let's head right out to the phone lines and welcome in Howard Beck. He's a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. He's covered the NBA for quite a while, really knows the league. Howard, how you doing, man? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Matt. Good to talk to you. How are you?
We're doing well. I'm with John Dickinson. And let me start here, because one of the things that I noticed before the season started with the Warriors was that there was a pretty wide variety of predictions about what kind of season they were going to have. Saw some predictions less than 40, saw some over 50. What did you think the potential of this Warriors team was before the season started, and then has that changed 20 games in?
Well, I mean, listen, wherever anybody had them or thought they had them in October, if they haven't adjusted their perceptions and expectations 20 games in, then they're not paying attention or they're just being really stubborn. I was somewhere in the middle probably. I think I was like a lot of people where I thought this is a good, solid team that had, you know, some really nice moments last season. And, hey, if they get Clay back, when they get Clay back, and if Clay looks like Clay, the usual caveats, then I think they're right back in the mix and they can be a top four team in the West. But it was all predicated on when does Clay come back? How long does it take him to get back up to speed? And is he going to be 100% of the Clay we saw before he went down 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago? Is it going to be 80% of Clay? What can he do? Can he be as great defensively as he was before? Is just his 40% three-point shooting enough to elevate them? Because calling them a contender before the season had to be predicated on Clay Thompson being minimum all-star level again. I don't think you are a contender in this league with you know, just Steph Curry as great as he is and Draymond Green, because Draymond is an all-star of a different mold. He's not a 20-25 per game scorer, and that's usually what you have when you have an all-star tandem that's leading you to title contention. That's just the way it usually goes. There are other models. It happens sometimes, but it's rare. And so to me, unless there was going to be some surprise breakthrough from somebody, and actually there have been a couple, I thought everything depended on Clay. What we've learned 20 games into the season is that it's not dependent on Clay, that they can play elite defense with the group they have, and that Steph's just incredible, I don't even know how to describe it, his incredible everything. The incredibleness of Steph is enough with a bunch of really great role players around him and elite defense to put you back, you know, in the category of the elite. And the fact is, you know, the top of the West has gotten muddled.
Yeah.
The Suns obviously are really good. They were another team that I think people were kind of waiting to see what they truly were under different circumstances, under non-COVID constrained circumstances, a full season with fans and arenas and everything else. But we thought the Lakers would be up there, and they're not. And the Nuggets were part of the, you know, the top tier, and now they're not. And, you know, the Clippers last season were, and now they're not because of Kawhi's absence. And so there was opportunity there too. But again, what the Warriors have done 20 games in with Steph, Draymond, and basically a bunch of guys, and I don't mean that as an insult. there's nobody of distinction in that group aside from the fact that Andrew Wiggins once upon a time was the number one pick in the draft.
Howard, when you look at the Suns, because we all watched them go to the NBA Finals last year, they're up 2-0. Milwaukee wins 4 straight. I think though, from a Bay Area point of view, because the Warriors were down by comparison to what they had been years prior, I don't think people really looked at the Suns with the lens of how would a matchup be against a really good Warriors team in terms of, you know, a playoff series and that kind of thing. What do the Suns do well for the Bay Area fan that maybe hasn't watched them with that lens?
I think the fun of this week in part is that because the NBA is now trying to schedule things this way more often, we're going to get this like little mini series, this home and home of Warriors Suns in the span of a few days. And so, you know, I hope what comes out of this is that people don't, if one team wins both, I hope what comes out of it isn't the, you know, one of them was just exposed as a fraud and the other one is now going to the championship. But that's what will happen because that's the world we live in. But it will be kind of an interesting little you know, preview for what it's worth. And look, November and early December games will mean almost nothing in the spring. Regular season games are very rarely predictive anyway of the playoffs. So the every time somebody trots out what somebody did in the regular season series, I dismiss it out of hand. But still, considering the Suns' hot streak, what the Warriors have done, the fact they have the two best records in the league, I do think like these are really, really intriguing games, and as good as it gets for this early in a season. The Suns are really stout defensively. They've got size in a more traditional fashion, right? DeAndre Ayton's a seven-footer who can guard the rim and do a few things with the ball in his hands and create pressure inside. You know, I mean, I think everybody knows what Chris Paul does, and everybody knows what Devin Booker does. You know, Devin Booker, to me, is, you know, while I don't say this lightly, he is, you know, as close of a construct as we're going to get stylistically to a Kobe Bryant type of shooting guard in today's game, and he's patterned a lot of what he does after Kobe, so he's really clever in the mid-range and accurate there. We know that Chris Paul is one of the all-time great players in the mid-range. So this is a team that can hurt you everywhere because they have great three-point shooting. And, you know, Bridges is a great, you know, 3-and-D player who's just gotten better every year. They've got nice bench depth. You know, Landry Shamet and JaVale McGee, who you guys are familiar with, they're just really solid all the way around. They play well together. This is not a super team that we're used to from the prior era where everybody's got their three stars or more. You know, Chris Paul is a star in his late stages, and Devin Booker is a star still in his early prime. And DeAndre Ayton's not a star yet. So they are kind of that alternate model.
Howard Beck, senior writer at Sports Illustrated, joining us. Howard, I want to ask you about Curry because, you know, you've seen a lot of the greats up close. And, you know, people say, well, who does he remind you of? And the fact is, to me, he reminds me of nobody. But in a way, he reminds me of, believe it or not, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, because when he rose up kind of for that sky hook, he was either going to make it or not. And the defense really didn't have much say-so over it. I kind of feel that way a little bit with Curry from 30 feet and beyond. But what is it about Curry to you that makes him just, you know, one of the most mesmerizing players in NBA history?
Because he's not like anybody else. I mean, it's exactly what you said at the opening of that, which is that Steph is not a superstar that is in the mold of anybody else. You know, it's this game was ruled by big men, you know, Russell and Chamberlain and Kareem and Hakeem and Shaq. And those guys, while they all played differently, there was something about them you could compare to each other. And Kobe arrives in the mold of Michael Jordan, who was arriving in the mold essentially of Dr. J, in some ways. And the great point guards in particular, if we want to go like, you know, apples to apples, size to size, and you think about the great point guards of all time, you know, Stockton or Kidd, Nash, you know, Isaiah, Chris Paul, Steph doesn't play like anybody else. And, you know, we have also gone through this transformation where the point guard was at once upon a time more of a table setter for everybody else, score when you need to, you know, this era where, you know, almost all the point guards are scoring point guards, and then it's just a matter of what the balance is and how much usage you're taking up. Are you a James Harden, Russell Westbrook who's just controlling absolutely every possession? So even in this era, Steph stands out because he doesn't do that. Even when he's been limited in terms of the supporting cast and not had another go-to scorer next to him with in Clay's absence and after Durant's departure, Steph didn't all of a sudden like shoot up. I don't think. I'd have to double-check this. I'm pretty sure he did not all of a sudden shoot up to 35% usage the way that Harden and Westbrook often operated, the way that Luka operates. And it's partially the system that they run. I know that that's of contention sometimes amongst Warriors fans. He's not just running pick and roll every play and controlling the ball every second of every play until he decides to either shoot or pass for an assist. And so he's effective in all these other ways. And, you know, all the motion, all the coming off screens, just drawing defenders to him, even when he doesn't have the ball, there's just been nobody like him. And I do think he is truly unique in that way, and I hope people appreciate that.
Howard, what, if anything, do you think has the potential to maybe trip up some of the Warriors' momentum, and how much of that maybe can be mitigated by, hey, Klay Thompson's coming back, and that could give him a legit boost?
If I were going to look at this, like, where's the glass half empty version of this? Okay, Klay comes back. He's not going to be Klay on day one, right? Like, I don't think that's reasonable. I think even Steve Kerr has tried to tamp down expectations. Like, it's going to take some time to ramp up. It's been 2.5 years and 2 very, very serious injuries. And so even if Klay ultimately reaches 100% of who he was, as I think we all hope and on some level maybe even expect, it's not going to be the first day he's back, most likely, right? So in the meantime, let's say that he and Weissman both are reintroduced into the rotation around the same time. That's a ripple effect. Guys are going to have to adjust. The rotation will change. Guys' minutes will change. Their roles will change. Eventually, Jordan Poole presumably goes to the bench to make room for Klay. And so that, you know, any adjustments like that sometimes can cause you to backslide a little bit while you adjust. It's not a negative. It's just a necessary kind of recalibration of you know, roles and expectations. And so I don't think there's going to be slippage, but I do think that, you know, that is a mini bump on the horizon. And we have to remember too that Weissman doesn't have a ton of NBA experience yet. He's been with the Warriors now for long enough to, and I think it's actually probably benefited him on some level. Like, I know the best thing is reps, the best thing is to play, but being in that environment with that culture, working out with Klay a ton while they've both been rehabbing, having Iguodala there, who I know has been in his ear, like, just I think his Warriors education has probably continued, you know, quite aggressively, even while he hasn't been on the court. But still, his actual, you know, number of minutes of NBA on his NBA resume are scant, and so, you know, he's going to need some time to get acclimated too. So, you know, there are things they'll have to adjust to. But my gosh, to be 18-2 and then to get those two guys back sometime soon is just an incredible benefit.
Yeah, it's been very surprising to everybody out here for the most part, Howard. Hey, appreciate it as always, man. Thank you very much, and have a good rest of the holiday season.
Always a pleasure, fellas. You too. Thanks.
All right, Howard Beck.